Good morning, I'm Paul, founder of the New P&L Brand Purpose Institute and host of the New P&L, Principles and Leadership in Business podcast. Thank you once again for joining us on our latest episode of the New P&L. Just before we start the New P&L deep discussion today, just a quick reminder of our new leadership programs, the Transactional to Transformational Leadership Program and our new Mindset and Momentum Micro Workshops, all of which are focused on helping leaders and employees to build the skill sets needed for the future of business. And you can find the links to both the Transactional to Transformational Leadership Program and the Mindset to Momentum Micro Workshops in the notes that accompany the podcast. Or just go to principlesandleadership.com and check them out. This week's guest is Heather R. Younger. Known as the Employee Whisperer, Heather is an experienced international keynote speaker, CEO, and founder of Employee Fanatics. And she is the best-selling author of The Art of Active Listening, How People at Work Feel Heard, Valued, and Understood. And it's this book that we'll be discussing today. So Heather, a very warm welcome to the New P&L. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Perhaps if we can start the conversation with you giving listeners a brief overview of what you do and who you do it for.
A brief overview. I work for an organization, actually it's my company, called Employee Fanatics. We are an organization that focuses on helping organizations listen more effectively to those at work. And we do that through survey, data aggregation, listening sessions, round tables, employee resource groups, culture team facilitation and branding. So any way we can help them to gather and corral all the voices of their people, use that to drive strategy forward and to improve the employee and customer experience.
Part of the focus for today's conversation is your new book, The Art of Active Listening, How People at Work Feel, Heard, Valued, and Understood. So it'd be great to get some context around this book. Why did you write it and why did you write it now?
I wrote it because over the years of just seeing all of the surveys and being in the meetings with customers and employees, just realizing that a lot of organizations aren't listening to people at work. And there's a lot of damage and pain and a lack of loyalty and stuff that results based upon that. So I had discovered over the years kind of the right way to actively listen in that context, organizational listening as a whole, holistically, and decided it was something that the world needed, to be honest. And so decided to go fill that gap. And that's why I wrote the book.
So I think it's a fascinating time to write it at the moment, because if we look at the world more generally, we seem very polarized, and you know, you'll experience that in the States. We certainly do here in Europe as well. And we have groups that are figuratively and literally shouting at each other and seemingly doing very little active or empathetic listening. And employees and leaders, we don't operate in a microcosm. We're part of this. We're either actively involved in it and the shouting, or we're passively witnessing it daily. So how do we encourage active listening at work when it could be argued that this is almost the antithesis to many of our out-of-work experiences?
I think that it's one of those things that it does start outside of it. I mean, I often find myself speaking to groups of people, and then I'm talking about work, and they immediately go to their kids or their spouses or whatever to go, yes, I can see how this could work there. And what I always tell them is, I wish I could say I was like an expert at home. It's hard, so much harder to do there, partly because it's interesting how we don't feel on ourselves, we don't feel an obligation to listen as much. And in the way I describe at home is because we just release everything, don't we? We loosen up and we're fully ourselves. There's no like ramification of being fired if we don't do this well. There's no being written up if we don't do this well. And so I was really particular about making sure this book was a workplace book. I am a workplace expert. I am a work in progress as it relates to doing well at home. So that's the reason why. But I'm along with everybody else, that we're all works in progress, both home and at work. And now I'm just trying to help people focus more on just how do we do this better at work and with our colleagues and with our customers? How do we do this better?
So talk me through the active listening model. What does that look like? How do we start down this process and consciously and with a more commitment focus on active listening in a workplace environment?
I mean, it is a five-step framework. I put it together. It was just, again, it wasn't, this is actually not just theoretical. It's something I've lived over the last 15 years, yes, both in the customer and in the employee context. And so that first step is really recognizing kind of the nonverbal cues, recognizing the energy in the environment. I call it recognizing the unsaid. And so it's all these things that we walk into an environment and we see, and sometimes we choose to ignore, and sometimes we choose to respond to it. We have to do that in order for us to be able to move through the rest of the cycle in a way that lets people know they're heard, valued, and understood. But we can't do that until we start to see the signs. And that's really requiring us to kind of pause a bit, remove some of the distractions that are around us, our cell phones, our laptops, the thing, people that are approaching us. Sometimes it's making us just say, okay, I see that, like, I walk into a room, before I walk into a room, I hear people laughing, I hear people chatting, and I walk in and everything gets quiet. Why is that? Is it something about me that stops people from telling their truth, stops people from being their full selves? And those are the things that we need to reflect on individually and even organizationally to say, why are our customers, our employees telling us everything? And we see it in the survey comments, but we never hear it live in person. So it's recognizing unsaid first, peeling back the onion before we can kind of decide to lean into that next step, which is seeking to understand. Seeking to understand really is just that idea of leaning in to understand another person's perspective, getting kind of being prepared. Because at that point, as we recognize and said, we're preparing our minds are prepared now to go really lean in to do what we think is really the listening phase. But listening is all of this, it's all holistic. But we do that, we're leaning in and seeking in the ways that normally you would think of, maybe with paraphrasing and shaking our heads and all those things that we see kind of as more of a robotic or tactical way of listening. But we have to go there and go from a place, a good mindset of serving the other as we do it. And then that next step after seeking to understand is decoding. And that is taking all that we've kind of taken in on the nonverbal, on the verbal side of leaning and seeking, and then deciding to process it, to slow down, process what you hear, decide what our next steps are going to be. Maybe it's going to research it. Maybe it's including people in the leadership team. Maybe it's other, whatever, it could be anything. Looking at other data. And before we go do that fourth step, which is action. So decoding, pausing, reflecting, breaking down what's next is a critical step that most people do not do when they are listening. Which is not a bad thing. Most people are coming from a place of heart. So most people are coming from a place of, like, I heard you and now I want to go act. So I want to like help you fill that gap. I want to solve your pain for you. It's not a bad thing at the core. It's just that we lose the opportunity to really show the people they're valued on the other end, and that we respect them and their voices if we don't pause first and do that other work in the decoding phase. And that is, for most of us, the place we fall down, is that this is one step, like the first step of where we really don't do so well. And then that final step after action. So we act, we determine how we're going to act. Do we need to act? What kind of actions do we take? Being more thoughtful and strategic about our action. And then that final step is closing the loop. That's the fifth step in the cycle back to listening. And that last step really is where we dot the I, we cross the T on listening, to say, not only did I hear you, not only did I act on your behalf, well, I act on your behalf because you used your voice. And I think your voice is one of the most powerful things ever. And so I want you to know, number one, thank you. Number two, here's what we did. Here's what we plan on doing. Here's what we cannot do, but maybe we could come do this as a compromise. And it's that closing loop part of things that kind of goes back to them and says, here's the actions we're taking. Here's what we're doing. And it's because of you that says to them, wow, my voice is like, I guess I do have more power than I think. I guess they do respect me and value more than I ever thought they did. So that's the power of the cycle of active listening.
You discuss at length in the book, and you've touched on there the role of nonverbal clues in the active listening process. And I wondered how they have been impacted on by the hybrid world of work that we now live in, because so much of that conversation, of that active listening, is leaning forward, demonstrating, eyes raising, body movements, whatever it happens to be. In your experience over the last 2 to 3 years speaking with businesses, has it made a positive contribution to active listening, or has it inhibited its growth, if you like, or its adoption?
You know, it's interesting. We're about to embark on a study on this, so I'll be able to tell you kind of from a little bit more of a scientifically feeling way. I would say gut-wise, after just all the interactions, all the times that I'm interacting with people in many different ways, I would say that most people are limiting themselves in this environment. So they think that it's harder to do because they're not in front of the person. I mean, you can still pick up on what are people looking at as they're looking at the screen. They don't have to look like right at the video. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying, how present are they really? Do you see them looking down a lot? You can tell they're on their phones. Do you see them popping up email? We can all tell by people's eyes. Also, how responsive are they to your emails? How responsive are they on projects? Like, there's some little bit of different things that might be popping up that a little nuances that maybe we're having to pay attention to in different ways before, like that maybe we didn't as much so as it relates to like, how are they showing up to meetings? But at the same time, are they showing up to meetings on video or in person? It's the same gauge. It's just in a different space. So it's just like physically it's different. So I would say most people in their minds are finding it harder to read the signs. I don't think that the signs are all that hard if you're taking more time one-on-one with people, if you are yourself present during your conversations. That's what I think. I think most of us are just in our own way. We can't get out of our own way in our minds about how hard this thing is. Yes, we can miss things if we aren't slowing down to take more time. So the only thing I have to say people need to do in this environment is be more intentional about the time they take with the people that they're trying to make sure they stay connected with. I think so having the one-on-one meetings or making sure you're joining the team meeting, if you're not a manager, you just want to stay connected with your team or your customer, you want to make sure you're with your customer, make sure you have quarterly calls or whatever that cadence is to make sure that you're staying on top of it. But I think you can tell someone's present even here. You can tell. Yeah.
Is there such a thing as too much active listening in a business context? So is there a point beyond which, let's say you're a leader and you're listening to your employees and you're engaging with them, is there a point beyond which you set unrealistic expectations of what can be delivered as a result of that active listening?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good point. I'm going to answer it in two ways. One is I would absolutely say no. Here's why I'm going to say no. It's never enough, never too much active listening. It's because I know no one's ever doing enough. We're not in anywhere near it. So for me to say, oh yeah, there's a time where you're going to be too much, it ain't happening. Sorry, Paul, just not happening. What I would say is this, when we go in to listen, we need to set expectations about it up front. So like someone comes in and they're starting to talk and you say, oh wait, Sally, just one second. I just want you to know, like, I want to know first, what do you want from, like, what do you expect from me before the end of this conversation? Do you want me to act upon what it is that you're saying? Do you want me to be just an ear and you're really just here to vent? I need to kind of know that at the beginning. I just want to know. So when I'm listening for like, is there a solution I see here? That's one thing. I think the other thing is, at some point in that initial conversation, so let's say you say that and they say, nope, I just want you to vent. I just want to vent to you. But midway through, you're like, I'm getting the gist that I need to do something about this. Mm-hmm. So you might right in the middle just say, oh boy, so Susan, here's what I'm hearing. Here's what I just said, but I'm thinking you actually do want me to do something. But let me just tell you, I think we're probably going to be limited on a couple points. I'm going to keep hearing this through though, because I want to make sure like I get to the end and I really understand this, but I'm just telling you, there could be some limitations, but let's keep talking this through. And then they continue to talk through, right? You get to the end and you go, okay, I'm going to need to talk to so-and-so and so-and-so, because it sounds like we probably do need to take action. I don't know if there's anything we can do, but one thing I commit to doing is to following through on this for you to see if there is something. And I'll be back with you in the next couple of days. That's the cycle of active listening working. Doesn't mean you're going to take action. Doesn't mean you've overpromised. You're being 100% transparent. You're leaning into what they're saying. You are trying to empathize with what's happening, but you're not going to promise that an action is going to take place, and they will appreciate it. They will still feel heard in the process.
Like so many things, what defines active listening is a spectrum, and to reach the very active end of that spectrum, if you like, it requires a very keen sense of self-awareness, the ability to recognize the gaps in the way we currently listen, because most of us would probably argue we're great listeners, you know, that we're great at empathizing and so on. The reality, however, is somewhat different in most of our experiences. So what are the signs to look for and to work on within ourselves to ensure that we can commit on a daily basis, on an ongoing basis, to more active listening?
Yeah, I mean, I think that doing kind of like what I just did is a big one, which is, breathe, like exercise some mindfulness in some of this process, because what is going on in us has so much to do with how well we do in the active listening space. And if we're feeling riled up and we're feeling so chaotic, which by the way, I get there often because I have so many things going on. that I have to say, sometimes I have to ask permission to say, can I come back to you? I am a little scattered brain right now. There's just no way I'm going to give you my whole self in this moment to be able to let you give me your what you need to give me. So can we either pick back up on this in an hour? Can we pick back up on this in tomorrow? Can we? So that level of self-awareness of how you're feeling through the mindfulness that you practice, through kind of pausing, through taking the deep breath, through removing yourself from the stress that's happening, to come back to them and to say, okay, I think I'm ready now. I think I'm ready for you now. Now I'm ready to lean in. I want my seeking to be fertile. I want my seeking to be here to serve you. I don't want my seeking to be all about waiting to respond. I want my seeking to be totally messed up by thinking about 500 other things in my brain. And people appreciate that. They're like, okay, like Heather's here for me in the way I need her, like right here, right this. And even if it's for 5 minutes, it doesn't have to be for an hour. Could say, I can only give you 5 minutes, but this 5 minutes is going to be all yours.
Curiosity is essential to active listening. It's a critical component, I think. And I know you discuss this in your book, and it's something I speak a lot about myself and the keynotes I deliver in this podcast. Many of the episodes of this podcast touch on it. And I think it's a hugely undervalued characteristic in business. And that's in part, I think, because leaders struggle to figure out how to embed curiosity at the center of their culture. And I wondered what your advice was in this regard. How do we encourage and place that curiosity that is so critical to active listening? How do we put it back at the heart of business culture?
I love that. Putting it in there. I mean, I think one could argue that it starts in the top. I have an evolved view of that. And I think that curiosity now starts from each person, from where they stand, no matter their title. And if we say we want to be curious, it doesn't mean we want to be nosy. So we have to kind of reframe what curiosity means. Curiosity is an amazingly good attribute to have as a human, whether we have a title or not. Just to be curious about another means we are seeking to learn something new. We're opening up our minds to think that we don't know it all. And if we start off with in any interaction from a place of I don't know it all, and I want to assume that you're going to teach me something just by me leaning in with you, gosh, I mean, number one, the world is going to be so much more fruitful. It just really is. So I think that a personal ownership of curiosity is, to me, the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
And to also be curious about yourself. So this kind of goes back to the self-awareness part and even the social awareness. Like, how do you impact other people around you by your actions and your words? How can you personally change those? Because while we can look at an organization, like, for example, if we're talking about workplace is either like a place where people go. It's usually like there's usually a corporate headquarters. So it's usually like a brick and mortar type of place, but sometimes they're all fully virtual teams. So there is no brick and mortar. But there, an organization or workplace is really just like a legal entity. If you just look at it like a building, just put like a square or a rectangle. And inside of those walls, whether real or not, are humans. And we like put a lot of pressure and or a lot of stake on the people at the top, or people that like might live in the top of the of that building. They may be in the top 5 floors, 20 floors, whatever that is, right? That's usually what happens.
Yeah.
Which they do have a huge amount of power and control over what gets approved and what gets sanctioned and what gets all those things. They do. But when I'm talking about active listening, I really am talking about the human-to-human interactions, because there's all these humans walking about the workplace. And so I think we should give too much power to one set of them instead of giving a lot of power to ourselves to be the example for anybody, top or bottom, to follow. So I think that's what I want people to hear here, is that I don't know if you have a title or not, or what it's really less about that. It's more about your personal ownership of your own curiosity, that desire to lean in, curious about you, curious about others. Curiosity just means I want to learn. I don't know it all. And I think that's the key.
You stated earlier that active listening is not just trying to understand what is said, but is also what is unsaid, what lies behind the statement, the conversation, whatever it happens to be. The things that someone is too fearful or perhaps apprehensive about or doesn't feel safe to express in that moment. As a leader, how do we ask the right questions, probe the right way to get to the bottom of what is actively unsaid, as well as what is actively said. It's a very nuanced and delicate approach we need to take. And I wondered if we could seek your advice on that.
Yeah. I always say this, particularly if we're talking about leadership specifically, which I know we are in this podcast. You have to do the hard work first. So I had a webinar the other day with Stephen M. R. Covey, and he talks about speed of trust. And I see, you know, both of us, it's like the chicken and the egg. You got to listen to build the trust. You got to have trust to listen, because you can't actively listen to someone. So this idea of active listening, remember, means getting to the truth, reflecting on that truth, doing something about the truth if you can, and then following back with them, go up with them on what it is you've done about their truth. Okay. So as we think about it right up front, if you have to recognize the unsaid and you want to go deeper, sometimes you find that in things like, you might see it in surveys, so that they didn't say it to you in live person, but you might see it in a survey. You may see it in body language in round tables or certain like discussions or in town halls or things like that, where you're paying attention. They're like, wow, at that meeting, they seem to speak up a lot, but then like in the town hall, they were all like quiet. They never did this. They may have done the poll. That was something that was done that was anonymous, but why didn't they speak up in the group setting? So that's what I mean by recognizing the unsaid. And then if let's say like it's your group and your group is really quiet, your team is quiet, but you have personally done the hard work, but the senior leadership hasn't, or other managers haven't. So your group maybe spoke up, but no one else did.
Yes.
Then you can go back to your group, because you see, you've already done the hard work. You did the hard work already of building the trust. You already did all the things to show and express care and concern. You already showed them that when you list, they tell you their truth, you respond in a way that shows them that you care about them and that you heard them. So when you do that hard work up front, just by being with them and always being responsive and following up with them and do it, kind of working through that cycle, now you can be the one that says, oh, you are speaking, but like, why do you think your coworkers were not talking? What's that about? And don't worry, I'm not going to go talk about, you know, tell anybody's names or anything. I'm curious to know about what that's about. Or if it's a CEO who happens to be more open, and he is the person or she is the person who people are receptive to, they do speak up with them, but they don't with the other managers around. Well, that the C-suite can say, I noticed that you're way more quiet. And that's because they built that whole rapport with the people. So I would say the way you do it is to do the hard work up front, so that then they feel safe enough to at least speak to you to get to some level of truth.
How do you know if you're in an organization that we're active listening flourishes? You know, perhaps you're applying for a role in an organization and you want to figure out where the role of active listening plays in that culture, or you come into it. What are the milestones? What are the indicators? What are the demonstrations that an organization has embraced active listening?
Oh my gosh, I was just in one yesterday. I was speaking to a group in Seattle, and I did a poll, and the poll was on like, how do you feel like you have a sense of belonging here at this organization? And I usually do a poll like that or a survey, and it's like 60 something percent say yes, or 70 maybe, but it was 98%.
Wow.
98% of 400 people said that. I was like, what?
Wow.
And the majority, 20 something percent, were because their manager made them feel this way. So the sense of belonging is, I feel like I have a place there. I feel valued when I'm there. I feel like my voice is heard. I feel like I'm doing great work there. I feel like I have a, you want me to do this thing. I'm doing this thing because of you, and you expect me to be there doing that thing. I have a unique and place. I feel welcome. And when I speak up, it's like I'm an important person. Like, all these things are embedded inside of belonging. So I was just like, what? Like, and then asking that follow-up question of why. And again, it was like the manager, or feeling like I do great work and I'm valued for doing that work. And all of that is like embedded in this idea of having a voice.
Mm-hmm.
It's all, the voice is like at the core of it, and all the other things kind of splinter out from it. So I looked around, and as I spent half the day with them, I looked around to see how they interact with each other. They laugh, they made fun and poked fun of each other nonstop. I would see different groups, four or five people hopping into a car to go to lunch together. Like, it was kind of obvious the bond that was there and that was created. So there was no doubt for me that level of just like, again, fun that they played the fun play between each other. It was obvious to me that they were all feeling heard by one another.
I want to ask a slightly controversial question. Does active listening rest on the assumption that there's always something worth listening to? How do we decide what brings value? Is it the role of the listener to decide on that value, or do we have to be a passive passenger, if you like, in that conversation coming to us? Where is the balance of the relationship between the speaker and the listener, if you like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a really good one, especially as I think about like at home or like, so the other day I was at the airport. And there was a gentleman, I don't know the gentleman, it was just a gentleman. He just like turned around and started talking. Yeah. I don't even know what he was saying, but he was like, something about his father who, I can't remember what he said, but I was thinking, okay, this is not going. And I'm right. And it was a total stranger. And then he's like, yeah, my mother, she was so lucky when she, I don't know exactly what he said too. It was something strange about like death and like afterlife or something strange. And I'm like, number one, I'm like dead in the middle of writing something, and he just like bursts out and says something. I don't know the gentleman. I'm not sure. I think I owe him like the, like at least looking up and like acknowledging kind of he's a human and like he said something, but like, do I have to engage in that conversation that was kind of a little out there for me?
Yes.
I didn't think I needed to. So I just kind of, you know, shook my head, said a couple of things, and I kept doing my work. Now, in an environment where there's like coworkers there, or even like at home, sometimes, like me, I'll recognize and said, unfortunately, way more. I'm like a hyperdrive sensitive person. I can recognize that someone's angry. I can read it. And sometimes I don't have the time to address it right in the moment. I have to either come back or I have to let them, because I know their personality, I have to let them calm into it, settle into some things. Process some things, and then I come back into it and go, how are you? I noticed earlier you were this way. Because if I come at it when they're raw, it may not be the right time to address it. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if that's what you're getting to, but I think that whole recognizing that is a huge part. The nonverbal cue sometimes tells you to stay back for a while.
Do you have an own example from your own life, from your own career, where active listening has made a transformational change to you or your career progression or something similar?
You know what? The reason why I write about caring leadership, active listening, all of these things is because it's a strength of mine. Now, just notice I said strength. I didn't say I'm perfect at it. It's a strength of mine.
Yes.
So I said to myself, the people who look to me for guidance as a leader over these many years would say to me that I made them feel valued and important. They felt like I heard them. They felt like I leaned in and listened. They felt like I cared for them. So because I would get that feedback after leaving, years later, I was like, okay, I know a lot of people don't do this well because I worked for those jerks. So I know that they didn't do it well. I think someone owes it to the world to kind of teach some of the tactical ways to do it. And so that's why I'm in the business of doing this work, right? So I think that just, I mean, I've had multiple team members. Some one instance where it wasn't like all, you know, all like roses and birds chirping, but there was a time when there was a team member of mine. I recognized there was some interesting body language between she and a team member, and I didn't address it because it was a male team member, and I was like, something's not right between these two. And so after he left and I had kind of my one-on-one with her, I could recognize something wasn't right. And she divulged that there had been some harassment. And then it allowed me to go deeper because I recognized it. And I mean, if I would have recognized it and didn't do anything, or didn't recognize it and didn't do anything, what could have come from that? So I think there are times where it turns into things that are hard conversations, and it's time when it turns into things that are positive conversations. But no matter what, there's a legacy of care that's extended when the person on the other end senses they've been heard by you.
Yes.
Yeah.
As businesses and as leaders and employees, we have to communicate more than ever, but so much of that communication is inconsistent and ad hoc. I wondered how active listening actually contributes to strengthening and underpinning a coherent communication strategy.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I think that most people think when they think of communication, they don't think of listening. It's the weirdest thing in my mind. Right. And that tells you how much we need this.
Absolutely.
So communication is a two-way street. So somebody's talking, somebody's receiving, someone talks, someone receives. So I look at it like a tennis match. So I think that active listening is absolutely the foundation of a good communication strategy. I mean, can you imagine from an organizational view, if all the organization did, organizational leaders did, is just tell people stuff from a top down that had absolutely nothing to do with what was going on in the environment, there was a disconnect. It felt like there was a lot of tone deafness. Well, everybody would be walking around going, who are these idiots? Like, why should I even like listen to them, respond to them, follow them? They're not listening to me. They have no clue what's going on, which happens, unfortunately, in more than 50 or 60% of the organizations out there. So yeah, there's if you think that listening is not the foundation of communication, you're getting this thing all wrong. And that would explain, if you look at any results or outcomes that you may be getting in your past or in the current, it would be because you don't think of listening as the foundation.
Whatever we are listening to, or whoever we're listening to, we all bring a lifetime of bias to every word and phrase and sentence we interpret in that conversation at any given moment. And in a work context, often off the back of our own experience of being in that position, you know, and asking those questions in the past at some point. So when actively listening, how do we determine whether we are listening from a place of empathy and understanding, or from a place of bias based on our own experiences?
Yeah, that's a good one. I think there's a couple things. Like, first, the very first thing is, you know, you have to evaluate, you know, like I said earlier, this idea of curiosity is like you owning your own desire to learn and seek, right? And so as we think about the seeking phase, we have to have the right mindset to lean in, to understand, and even have the empathic way, or to empathize with the person in front of us. Yeah. So if we don't have the right mindset, that mindset of, I'm here to serve you in the interaction, I'm giving you what you need in the moment, I'm not here to take. Taking is going to come. It's going to happen by my giving, by my serving. I think most of us go in, we listen to respond. We listen to get. We're getting the sale. We're getting the reason why they're leaving. We're getting why we can't land. Whatever it is, it's a get mindset. So we have to lean in to say, how much am I here to serve you? And I really, truly am seeking. The seeking, if you think of the idea of seeking something. So if you Easter egg hunt, you're going to seek eggs. If you're going to a mountain and you want the falls, you want to see. I was just at a place yesterday where there was beautiful falls. Oh, I had to go on this trail, and it was like this walk and this hike. And my goal was to get to the end to seek the falls, right? So in the seeking part of the active listening, we are seeking the truth. We are seeking the truth of the other, not our truth. Their truth, and their truth might be hard to take. So get prepared, hunker down to say, this could be super uncomfortable to get to this truth. This truth might be something that knocks up against my value system. This truth might be, it could be many things. But if we are going in it, you know, with the right mindset, we'll be able to come out of the other end with a solution that solves for them and their pain. Yeah. And I think that's what we need to do. And we need to do that if we're in sales. We need to do that if we're in customer experience. We need to do that if we're in procurement. It doesn't really matter what, there's an outcome we're looking for. Mm-hmm. But we can't get that, like the end outcome, like the contract, the sale, the more keep the customer. We really can't get that unless we understand what they're going for. We have to seek in that way.
Just coming back to curiosity again, We all have things we love, our hobbies and our personal or our professional lives. And, you know, for me, I've had a lifelong passion for surfing, and I can hear a surfing conversation 100 feet away and just lock into it. And it made me think, I wondered, are there techniques, because we're so actively engaged in those things we love, what can we take from the curiosity that we find in the things we love and apply to the things that we experience every day and the conversations we have every day? Are there certain techniques, tools that we can drag across from those passionate things into and applying to those other things in our other conversations in our lives?
I think there always are. People think I'm like the master of metaphor. Like I can find something and be like, and there was a, like you, like the wave, like the wave goes up and it crescendos down, like whatever you're saying. And that's exactly how this is. I mean, I'm constantly doing that. I think it's because I can see opportunity for learning in every the situation, like something will happen and be like, wow. So here's an example. I have four children. One of them plays soccer. I remember there was one team that they played against, and they, everybody knew they were like the top two in the state or something, mm-hmm. right? So everybody knew it, and we knew it, we were not. So as I watched these people play, as the other team was playing, and I heard them talk to each other, shouting to each other, how they were supporting each other, but that same, how they were hard on each other. Like, I could hear all these things. I could see all these things. And immediately I thought, oh my gosh, like, number one, I told our coach, these are the things that we aren't doing, which define that particular team. But I was able to see all these leadership things. And I would see how obviously that leader helped that team lead each other. They were all little mini leaders of each other, and they all were receptive. And boy, the level of communication and the back and forth. So I could see all these things as the sport was unfolding, right? So I think, yes, if we are open to seeing the connections and the things that we're passionate about to the things that we kind of have to do to survive or to be able to go do more of the things we're passionate about, right? We work in order to play, then I think it's easier to do that. But if you don't have that openness, you don't have a curiosity, if you don't have that kind of like, it's like your brain is like blank slate when you go into your playful times. And as you're in the playful times, like things just come to you, you receive them, that openness to do that and not be so hard line or even to kind of like say, this is my fun and this is not my not fun.
Yeah. Aside from active listening, what are the other characteristics are you thinking that are going to define the leaders in the future of business? From your perspective, where do you see that set of half a dozen characteristics? What else are they besides active listening?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, we have to start with ourselves first. I kind of led with that, didn't I, as I was talking about owning our own curiosity. So we have to, you know, be more self-aware, and we have to take care of ourselves. I love the idea of surfing and whatever it is that we do that we feel cared and we feel taken care of. We feel more whole and filled up. So we have to do those things. We have to skill ourselves up so we can continue to learn and be available in different ways to people around us. We have to have a good supportive network around us. So self-leadership is a big, big one. I would say also, you know, making sure that we involve other people, like say our team members, in the work to be done. Because often we think we have to do everything. Yeah. And that we have to also keep the straight face, not appear stressed, all those things. And that is BS, sorry. You have to be willing to show some vulnerability. Selective vulnerability is what I call it. You have to be willing to open up the door and say, I need some help. I can't get to 12 meetings at one time. Can you go to one and I go to one, and who can do this and how can we cancel? You have to be willing to get help from other people. I think another big one is we have to recognize people for the work they do, and we have to do it often. I mean, there are statistics out there that if people have not been recognized in 1 week, like within a week's period, they feel like they never have. And so we have to, as leaders, manager of people, it's probably our biggest job to seek the strengths of others, to recognize them in the moments they do them, to recognize the meaningful work they put in, to show them the connection between the values, the goals we have, and the work they do. Leadership is not for the faint of heart. It just isn't. Mm. It's not for everybody. And that journey of seeking and finding and uncovering and uplifting, and it has to feel exciting for you. You should not be doing it.
Great advice to end. Thank you so much for your time today, Heather. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. For those who would like to learn more about the work that Heather does or order a copy of her book, I've included the links and the notes that accompany this podcast. And please do take a moment to also check out our Transactional to Transformational Leadership Program and the Mindset and Momentum Micro Workshops. And the links for those are also in the notes. Finally, if you have enjoyed this episode or any of the other episodes of the new P&L, please do take a moment to rate us or review us. It all helps with our ratings and our rankings. So finally, I'm Paul, host of the new P&L. I look forward to speaking to you again next week. Have a great day and speak soon.